This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
It's Preakness Week, and I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 15th, episode 1697, brought to you today by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, horse world.
Gagasys. Oh, wait a minute. Wrong button. Oh, sorry, I forgot the wrong button. I apologize.
Monday
it slipped.
Is my favorite time of
This is Horses in the Morning with your lovable hosts, Jamie Jennings.
I am the queen. You listen to me.
I'm sorry that people are so jealous of me, but I can't help it that I'm popular.
Glenn the Geek.
You look especially radiant today, Your Grace.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Happy Monday.
Still the best opener, simply because Stuart Smalley has made his way into being a reflection of you, and it makes me so happy. Happy Monday, everybody!
I hope you all had because of the lead-in, the Kegasus lead-in.
No, I'm not talking about that.
No,
we don't talk about Fight Club behind the scenes. No, Well, we'll have to go over Kegasus and why it's super annoying and frustrating, because there's a lot of people that don't know who Kegasus is.
I can't tell you how many people over the weekend said you are going to play the Kegasus song to annoy Jamie, right?
It's the only week you're allowed to, my friend.
Oh, I haven't.
But I actually have something to tell you. It's not related to Kegasus, and I keep forgetting to tell everybody this. But I have a diagnosis for Precious Magic Gallop Jennings.
A diagnosis? Is something wrong?
Yes. Well, I had the vet come out to give her a once over, and we should be talking about Kegasus now. I should have rolled with that. But anyway, I got to tell you guys, because I haven't told you yet and I needed to get it off my chest. So Dr. Hendricks, as you guys know, love, she came out here to see Precious Magic Gallop Jennings, Magic as I'll call her. And she's like, what did you do? I know. Just come in and look at her and tell me what you think. And let's see start a health program for her. She's like, what did you do? Really? Because you see this wispy, strung out little black pony.
Do you know how much you owe me on my vet bills for the other 1,000 horses you have?
I know. It's pretty terrible. So she's like, can I touch her? I'm like, yeah, you can handle her. She's totally fine now. You can do whatever you want. She's not a huge fan of the back right being picked up, but other than that, she's okay. So I'm holding her and she's giving her once over. She's like, well, she's a lot quieter than I thought she was going to be. All right. Well, let's go out and talk about it. Takes me outside and she's like, well, I have a question. I go, what? She's like, has she been exposed to a stallion?
Oh, no.
I'm like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? She's like, she's three and a half. And she just has more developed parts than you would imagine for a three-year-old. I'm like, oh, my God. And in my head, I'm like, I'm going to get a dang black colt out of this thing.
It'll be 11 hands.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, I think we need an ultrasounder.
Oh, geez.
I'm like, no. I start hyping. Like, Chad's going to kill me. He's 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 going to kill me. Like, so we take her out and we do an ultrasound on her. And she's like, well, good news and bad news. I'm like, please don't be pregnant. Please don't be pregnant. Please don't. She's like, well, she's not pregnant. I was like, oh, thank God. She goes, bad news is she had a baby 3 months ago.
Ugh. Oh, really? At that age?
Is that not the saddest thing you've ever heard?
Wow.
She had a baby in like January or February up in Northern California in like 6 feet of snow, obviously didn't survive. And this little poor little angel baby who's 3 years old was like raped by some nasty stallion. Now I understand why she's like.
Although from your story last Friday, maybe she was the one that started it.
I think she started it with Thor, now that you know. She's like, I know what's going to happen here. Yeah, so poor little thing has had a baby already. Oh, she's only 3 and a half.
I didn't know their parts were ready for that. At what age can they have babies? Is that a
apparently they can have one at 3 and a half. Yeah, she's like a teen mom. She's like the episode of Teen Mom, you know. It's pretty sad. So anyway, just thought I should let you guys know that poor little precious Magic Gallop Jennings was a teen mom, lost her child. And I think I'm going to start a GoFundMe account for her and getting her spayed. Like, I think it's only $1,000. There's no reason a horse like this should ever, like, what if I sell her someday and then somebody's like, oh, let's have a baby. She's so cute. She does not need to have babies. I think I need to get her spayed. let's start a GoFundMe to get her spayed. Like, this horse never needs to have a baby ever again. Let's just go ahead.
By the time
that.
This horse is 3 and a half, it's going to have had a baby and be spayed. That's going to be a record of some sort.
That's genius. It's genius is what that is. You're welcome. All right. Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
Coming up on today's Omega Alpha Equine Monday edition, once Glenn has reassured the entire tech world that the sky is not falling,
oh,
thank
but
you very
it is.
Much to a certain virus going
no, but
around.
But it is falling. That's why you have to
it's
talk
not
about.
Glenn. Diana Troik is going to stop by, and she's going to give us an update on what's going on in the world of mounted archery. And she may be one of the most badass ladies we've ever had on the show. I cannot wait to hear what she has to say. And then finishing up, Leslie's back with the Wacky World of Horse Station with her Mongol Derby update. And she's got the Mongol Derby coach with her. Can't wait to find out about that. So stay tuned for the parade, folks.
Well, my Daily Winnie is two parts. It goes out to a couple of our auditors who had a pretty good weekend. Lisa Locke basically said that she rode her first combined test yesterday, and her horse Duke and her, she always wanted to try eventing and never had, and she did, and she won. She got
Yay!
First place. So congratulations to Lisa. Lisa's having a pretty good month, huh? She's also the one that got engaged at Rolex. So it's been a good couple of weeks for Lisa. And maybe that motivation from going to Rolex really sent her over the edge. And she has Duke is cute, too. I don't know if you saw the picture of Duke, but he's really cute.
I'm gonna look him up right now.
Yeah, in the auditor room, she posted a picture. He's really cute. Auditor Biz Stam, everybody knows. Everybody knows her from singing the Jewish songs at every radiothon. She went to a dressage show over the weekend, got another 65, and placed second against the big boys, she said. Kyger Power. Isn't that a Mustang?
Tiger's a Mustang.
Yeah, that's right. It's her Mustang. Placing 65, second place at a dressage show. So good for her. I know Biz is very proud of her Mustang. So, and she should be. Good job, Biz. And those are my Daily Winnies.
Way to go, girl. Well, that Winnie is appropriate because I wanted to give my first Daily Winnie out to my husband for an amazing Mother's Day. I had such an action-packed day yesterday. I woke up and then I went and rode while he took care of the kid. And so I went and took a trail ride and I rode Zeus and I ponied Magic on the trail ride. And her first time being ponied, I've led her on the trails, but I hadn't ponied her before. She was perfect. He was perfect. He was like this awesome big brother. He's unlike her other big brother. Who tries to mess with her when she's in heat. Zeus is totally fine. He doesn't care.
He's gay.
I think he was gelded when he was like 3 months old. He's like, I have no clue. So they were perfect. It was super fun. And then I went and I took them to the golf course and watched them play. And I got to drive the cart around to drink, which, you know, I love that part of golf.
They had baby ducks.
Yeah, it is. And they had like ducks that came running up and they see people and they must just get fed all the time. And so this whole like 8 baby ducks come running up to me. And of course, was not expecting for me to reach down and pick one up. And the mama got really mad. And I'm like, here, Lucas, hold it. He's like, put it back. The mom's going to bite me. So I picked the baby ducks. We fed the fish. It was like a very Nature Channel golfing experience. And then I went and got a pedicure and a massage at a little local reflexology place. So I have a cute little horseshoe painted on my big toes and I got a massage. And then I went home and I walk in the door and the husband has already cooked dinner and is like plating it as I walk in the door.
Wow. You got some kind of a word for yesterday. Not reward.
We won't talk about that. So anyway, it was really a lovely Mother's Day and thank you, husband. Now I got another one.
Oh, okay.
All right, so I have to give my daily whinny to a movie that I saw over the weekend, King Arthur: Legend of the Sword. You guys, this movie was really good. And I was reading, Chad and I are trying to figure out what movie we want to go to. We got a babysitter Saturday night. We're like, let's go to a movie. And I'm reading all the reviews of all the different movies. And this movie was just getting crushed in the reviews. Just every single person that is a real critic gave it like a 0. They all hated it. And then I started reading the audience reviews. And everybody who went and saw it loved it. So of all the movies, we really wanted to go see that one. Did you like Glenn, did you like Sherlock Holmes, the newer ones with Jude Law and Iron Man?
Yes.
Yeah. Same director. Those same like sped up fight scenes and kind of looking forward and everything sped up.
Oh, Jennifer loves those. It's the
same director. Same director, and he does a lot of that in this movie.
And I think I've seen every King Arthur movie. There's been 1,000 of them, at least. Every King Arthur Lancelot movie that's ever been made. Sean Connery's one, First Knight, was always my favorite one. But so what makes this one different than all the others?
Well, if you saw First Knight, this is totally different than First Knight.
Yeah?
Totally different. There's no romance. This is an action movie.
Guinevere's not in it?
There's no Lady Guinevere.
Really?
This is kind of, this starts out when he's a little kid.
And so this is before Guinevere.
Oh, yeah. This is at the very beginning. It starts out and he's a little kid and how the sword gets put in the stone and then how he's able to get it out and then what happens afterwards. And I was like, uncle was this horrible king and was, and there's some like magic stuff in it. And there's,
Is Merlin in it?
Merlin is in it briefly, but just kind of talking about the stone. I'm sorry, about the sword and how the sword was for.
So we don't end with him dying on the lake with the lady. We don't end with that than this one.
No, this is just like a story of King Arthur and kind of they've set it up to do a bunch of them. Now, unfortunately, it didn't make very much money, so they might not do a second
over the weekend.
But if people, I think it's one of those is going to pick up steam because the critics panned it, but everybody who's seen it really likes it. And to me, it was an action movie that didn't have any gore. Like there was
no heads getting cut off,
slit or something like that. I mean, people got killed and there was fight scenes, but there was no gore associated with it. But it's very much a Guy Ritchie kind of artistic King Arthur. But I think you guys would really like it. If you like that Sherlock Holmes type style and Jude Law's in it. And the guy who plays King Arthur is crazy hot, ladies. Good God. Of course, he has to take his shirt off.
Of course.
Had to happen. And he's like a little bit of a hero.
Part of the problem, too, is it was going up against Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which, you know, made another $70 million over the weekend.
Well, Chad was like, which one do you want to go see? King Arthur, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And I'm like, I haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Yeah, he goes, really should.
And then he's Well, he said to me, he goes, I was listening to your show and Glenn really liked Guardians of the Galaxy 2, didn't he? And I was like, yeah, he really loved it. And he goes, let's go see King Arthur.
That's funny.
Yeah, he knows. He knows your taste in movies.
All right, good. Well, good. So what do you give it? Six flakes and a bale.
I would give it five.
Oh, well,
five flakes and a bale, because it was an action movie that I could stomach that didn't have like a bunch of gore in it. But there's one part that they kind of sped through, which in the they could almost go back and make a movie about the part in the dark lands, which if you see the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. They kind of sped through that really, really quick. And I feel like that could have been a movie in itself. But they had to get through the story and get to the end in 2 hours. And it wasn't like a 3.5 hour action. It was like 2 hours. Boom. In and out. So.
Good.
It was really good. I liked it.
For me, that's only
it,
one bathroom break, 2 hours.
Yep, that was one. It was one bathroom break, exactly.
Right. For Ted and I. Unfortunately, Jamie and I are on the same bathroom schedule. Stop 52 times on a road trip. I wanted to, before we get into anything horsey here, I did want to talk about, because I know horse people are not always up to date on the tech stuff in the world, but this...
Speaking of horses, King Arthur, horses. Oh my God.
Oh yeah, horses.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All Frisians.
All Frisians.
All of them.
They are. Because that's all they had in England back then.
Black Frisians and white Andalusians. There's a lot of white Andalusians.
They didn't have any ugly horses back then, did they?
No. The Frisians and Andalusians were a dime a dozen, even though, you know, they're from Spain and Holland. They were in England
probably
all the time.
Probably weren't even around back then. they really should have had some pretty ugly mutt ponies would have been more appropriate, but they don't film
we're
really
seeing
well.
King Arthur ride off on an Icelandic would not be as sexy as jumping on a great Andalusian stallion and galloping away. Tolting away would not be it.
All right, let's talk about your computers and keeping them safe so you can keep listening to our shows. This ransomware attack that happened over the weekend is serious stuff. All the tech guys' shows that I listen to that usually say, oh, don't worry about this one. Oh, don't worry about this one. The press is overblowing it, are all saying, worry about this one. So this is the scoop. What it is, it's called WannaCry. We Cry, WannaCry, has a bunch of different names like that. And it actually is activated by opening up an attachment on an email, which we all know we're not supposed to do on emails that we don't know what they are. So this then locks your computer and puts up this bright red message that says you owe us $300 or you're never getting your computer back. And it gives you like 7 days to pay by Bitcoin, of all things. Then you got to go figure that out. And then if you don't pay in the 7 days, the ransom gets raised. And if you don't pay in a certain amount of time after that, they lock your computer up and basically destroy it. Now, this ransomware, originally, everybody's blaming Microsoft because... I'll explain that in a minute here, but it originally came from the NSA. It was stolen from the NSA. Now, you would think that our government, NSA, who spies on everybody, would have their little viruses contained in a lockbox, but apparently not locked enough. So that's how this got into the wild and then got exploited. The key here is you've got to update your Windows computers. If you have a Windows 10, this patch came out in March, so you would not be affected by this if you did your normal, regular updates like you're supposed to. So go make sure your updates are done in whatever Windows you have. Now, if you are sitting there with a Windows XP, which I'm assuming many of our listeners are, Windows doesn't even support that anymore, which means they haven't done updates. And it's the XP computers that are getting really nailed by this, although Vista and Windows 8 computers are getting hammered by it as well. This was so bad, it shut down the health system in England, closed hospitals. They had to cancel surgeries because they were completely locked out of their computer systems. Trains in Russia had to just stop because their computers were locked up. They couldn't go. And it has affected car assembly plants, anything using older versions of Windows that hasn't been updated. So you've got to update. Now, they have done a special patch for Windows XP, Windows 7, Windows 8. Go on there and make sure you do your updates. Look for updates on those computers, every computer you have, because once it affects one, it will go through the network and affect others. So if you've got one computer, probably all of them are going to get it. if you're on a network at home. So definitely make sure all of your computers are updated. That's the best way to make sure you don't get this. It is serious stuff. They do not have there. You might have heard about this kid in England who found a way to shut it down. That was only temporary, and they have the hackers have found a patch around that, and it's back in full force today, hitting China and Asia. Have really got clobbered this morning. What happened was, usually the older computers, the ones that are running XP and things, are business computers. They have old programs and they can't update it to Windows 10 because the old programs won't work. So they keep these old ones, and people are going to work this morning for the first thing since this hit in the United States. So they're expecting it to hit a lot of businesses across this country too. So just make sure you have your patches done. There's my tech warning of the day. This is really a serious one.
Got me scared to death.
Judged by the people who couldn't get surgeries in England because they were canceled. So it is something to really be concerned with and make sure you have your updates done. So, Jamie, make sure your updates are done.
Okay. Sounds good, boss.
All right. That's it for that. Now, from that, I just feel an obligation, if you don't mind, to do the loser of the week already on Monday.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Okay, I don't know how to do this story without reading it, because I'll just read it. Canton, Ohio, two Tennessee walking horses, Charm and Master Charm, were rescued this week from a closed Canton gaming parlor after passersby saw the barnyard creatures banging their heads against the front windows as if trying to escape. Yes, you heard that right. Police told the newspaper they found the owner of the games parlor passed out, wearing a cowboy hat in the back room, and this was near a busy Walmart and Rite Aid. Why the horses were in
what?
So he is in there passed out drunk, and the horses have been in this parlor. Get this. Let's see here. Someone who helped the owner lead the animals into the building about a week ago alerted police, saying the horses, one white and one chestnut, had no food or water for about a week. So apparently this guy who owned a parlor that's closed decided he would keep his horses inside and then got flaming drunk and never fed and watered them. So he must have been quite a bender. So apparently the veterinarian was called to examine them. Their condition was unknown. During the horse rescue, Canton police called medics to rescue the owner due to his level of intoxication. They had to call the ambulance. The man, who the newspaper did not identify, refused treatment and was cited with two misdemeanors of animal cruelty.
Wait. Where is this place? Where's Canton?
Canton, Ohio.
This is in Ohio?
Yep.
Do they allow gambling in Canton?
They had these gambling parlors. They had them in Kentucky, too, and then they closed them up. This one, apparently he's on hard times if he's going on a week-long bender with the horses.
He's taking horses to, like, an abandoned building and then, like, drinking his brain out and then...
Yes, you've got that. You've got the whole scenario correct.
That's a pathetic loser.
Right, there's a loser of the week.
I hope the horses are okay.
I do too. I'm assuming they're going to be. Give them some food and water, they'll probably be fine. But unless they're banging their heads against the windows.
That's crazy.
I know.
All right, I feel like at this time we should talk about the elephant in the room.
Oh, what's that?
I feel like we should explain the Kegasus thing, because we have a lot of new listeners that maybe don't understand. Kegasus,
Lord of the Infield Fest.
This will explain it all.
Third Saturday in May, that's when the Preakness comes to Pimlico. For the wilder walks of life, in the middle of it all, sets the Infield Fest. As legend goes,
JD the can't
leader
shut
of these
off.
Crazy
I have all
folk
the
is a half-man, half-thoroughbred party man.
But I can't turn her
named
off.
Kegasus.
Half-horse, half-man with beer in hand, he strolls the infield vest. He's bold, he rocks, he's hot to trot for girls with beautiful gas. It's Kegasus. Kegasus. He's a mighty stallion crossed with a human, partying hard till the break of dawn. And now the legend lives.
You missed it, didn't you? I know you
Son did. Of a gun, you turned me off of you one more time. So basically, what you heard is real. It's well, real.
It was real.
It was real. It's a dude that is like half horse, half man. He's a centaur, if you will. Who like walked around the infield of the Preakness drinking and with everybody. And they used him as kind of an advertisement.
God, they had many billboards of him and everything.
Like 6 years ago. And nobody talks about Kegasus anymore except for one person. Glenn.
Me. And the listeners that wrote to me this weekend going, please annoy Jamie. I don't know why they like to annoy you so much, but.
So he was like a, what's the, just a mascot.
Yeah,
really,
it was a mascot. It was just a party mascot. It didn't work real well, I guess.
No, because it was weird. They did it for like 2 years and then they realized that nobody really cares. And the thing is, like, the Preakness is, you think the Kentucky Derby infield is a party. The Preakness infield is insanity. Those people don't see a horse. They don't even know they're at a horse race.
Well, I was going to say, like, they need a reason to bring more people in to get drunk in the infield. You don't need any more reasons. They have full concerts in there. I mean, it's wild.
I mean, there's concerts going on in the infield. There's nothing to do with horses, as people may not see a horse the entire time they're there. So Kegasus was a, I don't know, Glenn, you've just overplayed the song, I think. That song, yeah. You just overplayed it a little too much. And then it got me to where I hate Kegasus, and I find Kegasus to be offensive because Kegasus stealing the limelight from
the
horses.
I am just here doing the will of the listeners.
The will of the people. You're like King Arthur yourself.
To annoy the hell out of you. That apparently is their will, is to annoy you. Now, I will say it was mostly the guys that wrote to me. It was not a lot of the women. Just saying. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's always the guys who like that thing. Weird. Well, speaking of the...
I'm sorry to see it fade away. I am here to make sure that it lives in history.
You know, you should actually find the person who was Kegasus.
And he was not a handsome dude either.
No, it was not a centaur to write home about. It was like a beer.
You know, it would have probably worked. I know they were going for the, you know, drunken frat boy look, which he definitely had. But I think it might have worked if the guy had been a good looking hunk. It might have actually worked.
He was definitely the frat boy. You know who it was? It was the guy that was on the bender with the two walking horses in the Canton Gaming Parlor.
Yes, it was.
Pretty much the same guy.
Maybe it is the same guy. Maybe that's where he ended up after he lost his job as Kegasus.
That's why he refused treatment, because he's like, I should be working right now. I'm Kegasus. Don't you know who I am?
I promise not to overplay it this week. I had to do it.
You don't promise that. You know you can't. Don't you lie to me.
This having you be able to mute you now again is so nice. So nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed that.
Yes, I did. All right. Well, let's
stop. Hold on. Yeah. What was your awesome dream, bud?
It's a long dream.
It's a long dream.
Army guys were on the ground of the arena, and then Abby was standing on Joey's head.
Army guys were in the arena, and Abby was standing on Joey's head?
And then, wow, that's a wild dream.
Abby was about to fall off on Joey's head.
Abby was going to fall off?
And then I was about to...
And then he saved her. Oh, my gosh.
What a hero.
I mean, he's amazing.
King Arthur Jr.
Yeah. Sorry. Carry on. He had to tell me that, so you guys might as well listen to it.
Let's take a break and listen a little bit about Omega Alpha, and then we're going to come back with our first guest. We're going to talk a little mounted archery, and she's out your way. I see a lesson in your future. Coming right up.
I'm connected to the shoulder bone. The shoulder bone connected to the leg bone. The leg bone connected to the foot
bone. The leg bone connected to the foot bone is a humorous reminder of how things are connected and dependent upon each other. But all humor aside, the health of your horse's muscles and bones are key to his overall health and performance. At Omega Alpha Equine, just how important your horse's entire musculoskeletal system is to his health and happiness, so they offer a variety of different all-natural liquid supplements. Omega Alpha Equine, all natural supplements based on science to help all of your horse's connected parts stay healthy and perform at their best. Ask for Omega Alpha Equine supplements at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can visit them online at OmegaAlphaEquine.com.
That's right, Omega Alpha Equine. You can also find them on Facebook. Check them out there. We appreciate them being a sponsor every single week since we've started this show 6 years ago. Well, coming up next is an amazing woman who probably could kick all of our butts. She actually was on our Stable Scoop show about 3 years ago, over 3 years ago now, and we've had a couple listeners that have requested her back. So we have Diana Troik on here. She is a mounted archer. Good morning, Diana.
Good morning, Glenn.
Thank you so much for joining us again. We really appreciate it. And I think you're out Jamie's way. Aren't you in Scottsdale out in Arizona?
Yes, I am, Scottsdale. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, she's right on the other side of Phoenix. So you guys aren't too far away from
each
other.
I'm in the West Valley, way out here in the West Valley. You're in the area of town where things happen.
Yeah, that's right. Jamie's in the part of town
the
where nothing
West
happens.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So now you are probably one of the, I would say, kind of founders and also one of the premier mounted archers here in the United States for a long time. I know this is not a secret because I'm reading it right here. You're 66 now and have been doing this since you were how old?
I started when I was 49.
Wow.
And I'll be 66 on the 4th of July.
And actually, that goes, mounted archery, has it been around in the United States as a competitive sport for much longer than that?
No, it started in 2000 and, let's see, two, I believe, or actually 2000, it came over with Kasai from Hungary. And then our man here, Lucas Novotny, started the first club here in 2002, and I started in 2003, and then Mounted Archery of the Americas technically started in 2007, and it's been going ever since.
So you really are one of the founders, one of the ones that was in here since the beginning. And, you know, look at the life you have led since then. You've traveled all over the world doing mounted archery, been to where? Japan, Korea, Mongolia, all places I bet you never thought you would go for anything, let alone a competition.
Right, right. No, I love to travel. I've been to a number of places because I flew for United Airlines for 24 years.
Oh, wow.
But didn't realize I'd be going and doing horse archery, Poland. This year we're going to Brazil. But I just want to clarify, I'm not one of the founders. Lucas is basically the founder in the U.S., but I have probably consistently done it more longer than any woman.
Well, that was one of the questions. I have a couple of questions here from listeners, and I want to get to those too. But one of the questions from listeners, and this is the one I was curious about, you're going into countries, and this is considered a martial art in many of the Asian countries, and you're going into countries where it's very male-dominated. Is being a female an issue? Was it an issue back then? Is it now? Has it changed?
Never. No, they are the most wonderful people. I think horse archer families are spectacular. I've just been treated with the most, respect than anywhere I've ever been. It is dominantly male, except for in the U.S.
Right.
But no, they're fabulous people for everywhere I go.
Were you surprised that you were treated that well, or were you kind of expecting to be treated different because you're a woman?
You know, I actually never even thought about it. I just have so much fun doing it that you go in with such an attitude that, hey, this is, how can anything get better than this, riding a horse and shooting, that I never thought about how people would treat me.
Cool.
Well, I have some other listener questions. Let's go back to the beginning here. One of them was, should you be good at archery before you try mounted archery?
Ooh, good one.
No, I would say you have to learn how to ride a horse well first, because that takes years to be confident to let the reins go. And if you're traveling internationally, you have to be able to ride any type of horse, pretty much at any speed. Where the archery, you can pick up archery pretty quick. I never shot a bow before. And it takes a while to learn, but nothing like it does a horse.
So the riding the horse part, you consider the harder part? Yeah, that's the harder part. You know, it kind of, the mounted shooters kind of say the same thing. It's, you still have to, and you have to have a well-trained horse, I would assume.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Pretty much. In Poland, we got the military horses who had never done it before, but they're pretty much bomb-proof, so they were awesome.
Okay, so tell us about some of the interest. You've traveled across the world, and you pretty much ride the horses that are there. You're not traveling with your own for these competitions. What are some of the most interesting breeds or horses that you've come across along the way?
Oh, you're going to ask me their names.
No, I don't mean their names. I meant just, you know, what have you found? Either wild, they were crazy, or they were just the nicest horses ever.
Oh, they're all pretty good horses. In Korea, I've been there 6 years in a row, and they have different breeds there. They have their own breed, but they're very fast. They're pretty much Asia, their horses go at top speeds. Turkey, Iran, Korea, Jordan, they're fast. And so you have to, you know, learn to shoot fast. A little horse I've ridden her 6 years now, and she was one of the top fastest horses. And then I would go to Poland, and Poland had the military horses, but I got a different horse that the man running it wasn't using. However, we didn't realize he'd put on weight and hadn't had his feet done, so he was the slowest horse. So it's a luck of the draw, kind of like the rub of the green for golf. You get what you get, and you just, you know, deal with it and have a great time. It's all about the fun.
Now you're, and for those that are new to mounted archery, I know we've talked about it before, but we have new listeners all the time. Kind of explain how the competition works and how your particular round works.
Well, there's different events, just like in any sport. We have things that different countries have started. Like the Korean event is a single shot, a double shot, which is a forward and a back one, and then a triple shot. Or in Korea, it's a five-shot multiple. And you get six runs of those, two singles, two doubles, two multiple. And we'll do, if we're going to have a competition or a ranking, we do six runs of that. And then we'll do six runs of the Hungarian, which is a triple target that's a little further back and higher. And you start your run with 45 meters to shoot at. They're 9 meters away from the track, but they're 45 meters away, and you have zones. So you have 30 meters to shoot the forward target, 30 meters to shoot the side target, and 30 meters to shoot the back target, which is the most difficult one out there, depending on how fast your horse is. And you can hold your arrows in your hand so you can speed shoot, which is what we do. It's the old Mongolian-style thumb release, most of us.
So
there are others at Kabak. Is a pole in the air that's 7 meters tall with a 16-inch disc on it that you ride under with a blunt flu-flu and shoot up at. There's a mogu that they do pretty much only in Korea, where they pull a ball made of sticks covered with canvas, and two people race after it. It's pulled by another horse, and you have arrows dipped in paint, and you try to shoot it as it bounces along.
You're shooting at the ball as it's bouncing along the ground?
Yes. Uh-huh. It's probably the most dangerous, but it's the most
fun. That's what I was thinking.
That's cool. Yeah. So if you are, I'm sorry, I'm just saying, if you're interested in getting started, what is some of the equipment that you will need to start out with? Are there special bows and arrows that you use for mounted archery, or just any old, what do you need?
Well, it's probably a sport that has the least dollar amount on equipment. You need a saddle and a bridle for your horse, and you need a bow, which is a horse bow. And we compare our horse bows a little bit with a recurve, but you are not allowed to have a shelf to rest your arrows on. It's all done the old way, the ancient way of horse archery. So it rests on your hand. And then your arrows can be carbon, wood, aluminum, although I don't think anybody uses aluminum anymore because that bends them. And you just match your arrows. We do not have, as most people do in shooting, if you have three feathers, you always have a cock feather that is a different color, so you know where to place your arrow. Because we are speed shooting, it doesn't matter what color. You can have one, two, or three colors because you're just grabbing your arrow from your hip or behind your back and throwing them on the bow and shooting. And then if you want, you can have a glove. Some use a glove and some don't. Some use a thumb ring so the string on your thumb doesn't bother you. And that's pretty much it. A quiver.
Gotcha.
You need a quiver.
Quiver. And do most people have the quiver is where you put the arrows. Do you pull it out of your back, or you were saying they're all like on your arm already? How does that work?
No, you are allowed to use a thigh, a hip, or a back quiver. If the Europeans or the Asians come over, a lot of them, like Japanese, they use a sash and they twist it in the sash. As long as it's contained, it cannot be connected to your horse. I personally use a back quiver. But I would say the majority use a hip quiver.
You know, okay. The thing that I think is so amazing when you see all the pictures, and I'm looking at a picture of you right now. By the way, looking pretty badass at age 66, I might add in there. But you're the twisting. You've got to have a strong back, and all your parts have to work because you guys are twisting, shooting behind you, in front of you. There's a lot of you got to be in shape to do this sport.
Oh yeah, you have to be in shape. You have to have like pretty much good balance, no fear of the horse. Let the horse do its thing. The one thing about horse archery that we like is the event pretty much is all on you. You're the one doing all the work. The horse is galloping down the runway, or if the Polish course, which is cross country, they have to weave in and out, but you're the one doing all the work, not the horse. Like, you know, in mounted shooting, which is fun, but it's like barrel racing. It's the horse doing the majority of the work, and you've got to do your aiming and your shooting.
Yeah. I mean, you with mounted shooting, you have a gun, and, you know, I've shot guns and shoot guns. And I mean, it's just, it looks easier than this. There's too many moving parts with this. It's like, does it take, you know, with mounted shooting, they have to, and we've talked about that quite a bit, how they have to train the horses and get them used to the shooting. Is it the same way here? They still have to get used to the arrows and the bow.
Once they're used to the arrows and the bow, it's just desensitizing them. That's pretty much the biggest part. And then you just get them into the speed that you want and try to get them to be consistent going down the track and stopping at the end. That's it. It's really, most horses pick it up pretty easy. Sometimes they want to speed up a little bit, but that's just because they're maybe not too sure of the arrows yet. But once they get used to it, it's repetitive for horses. Once they've got it, they've got it.
You know, it's funny that
and
you're...
And then you don't have to think about them. You need to think about the arrows of what you're doing.
It's funny that you're on today because coming up next, we have our regular contributor, Leslie from Horse Nation, who signed up and is entered into the Mongol Derby for the first time. So she's going to be doing...
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, she's doing that this year, and we've been picking on her nonstop, actually. And actually, today she has a guest on who's the official coach and trainer for the Mongol Derby, so we're going to be talking to her. What country was it that... What was your favorite country that you went to that you went... If there was any country outside the United States, I could live here, or I would want to live here.
Oh, boy. They're all so different. I mean, I love the people in Korea and Japan. I loved Mongolia just because it's wide and open, and I'm more of a mountain country girl at heart.
Did you ride the Mongolian ponies? Is that what they used in Mongolia?
Well, not for the competition.
No,
we had a couple days. We did a 7-day ride where we either trotted or were dead running, racing each other for 7 hours, and they never broke a sweat. But it was a little bit, we had different horses for the competition. They were still Mongol horses. They were a little larger. But I just love to run and race, and that would probably be my place because of the wide, open country.
Happy
people.
Leslie's going to want to know from you, did you drink the fermented mare's milk and did you get sick on the food? Because that's the two things she's most concerned about.
Well, the first 3 days we were out in the steppes staying in the yurts, and we did stop at one and they gave us the cheese and the milk, and I did drink it and taste it. No, I did not get sick.
Okay, good.
Right. And the rest of the time, we had pretty much American food, but in town, you know, the Mongolian beef is the best, needless to say, the best I've had anywhere. And I really enjoyed the food. I loved it all.
All right, we're going to tell Leslie that. It'll make her feel better.
I feel like Diana's like a positive person, though. You know, she hasn't said one negative thing about anything. So well, I feel like she could be lying right now.
All right.
Like,
so what's the worst experience you've ever had at a competition, Diana?
Oh, that's a good question.
See, now I got it. But I was asking all positive questions. Now I'm giving her the negative question. I'm giving her the opportunity here.
Okay. The worst was in Korea. The horse I normally ride, who I would carry the flag, U.S. flag out. Another group needed it since I wasn't the flag carrier. And so they took my horse and I took theirs, which was a horse that hadn't really done much of this. And he was dancing around and rearing and stuff like that. Doesn't bother me. But when we got all out in front of the audience, I was in the very back. And he just kind of, he calmed down and he was standing there. And all of a sudden I felt him bunch like he was going to rear. So, and I had my bow and stuff with me. So I grabbed his mane and just kind of let him start to go up. And I leaned forward, but he didn't rear. He headbutted me.
Oh.
And the bow caught me across the top of the nose and broke my nose.
Oh, that's so just nasty.
This was before anything started. So
he
I
knew what he was doing,
bloody,
too. He's done that before.
Nose. I had two black eyes. But it didn't hurt. That was the thing. It didn't hurt me. So I just put, you know, taped it up and did my competition for the weekend and came home like a peacock.
Let me get this straight. But here we go. Like, we're like, tell us the worst thing ever. You're like, well, I broke my nose, but it didn't hurt.
But it didn't hurt.
It was super nice.
I was bleeding everywhere. It didn't matter.
Broken noses hurt, and it didn't.
All right, here's the deal. Diana's in Scottsdale. I want to take riding lessons from somebody. Like, you could screw up wholesale, and she'd be like, that was so good.
That was so nice.
That was so nice. I'm coming.
I'm a positive person.
I love it. I love it. You know what? I know you fell off, and I know that you shot yourself with your own arrow, but like you did it with grace.
Yeah,
and
you'll
style.
Have that nice hole in your foot forever.
Nice. I think, you know what? You look really good in an ambulance. Like,
all right, I have to ask you about this. In 2016, you were at the World Martial Arts Mastership. You were on the World Martial Arts Masterships team. So this is considered a martial art. Yes. So when you get together like this, is it just the archery? Is all the martial arts? Is it like an Olympics of martial arts?
Well, normally it's just horse archery, but for that one held in Korea, it was in a different area. So the horse archer people were in Sokcho doing the horse archery, and the rest were in Seoul, I believe, or they might have been in a different spot. They did it all there. We did go to the opening ceremonies with everybody, and, you know, we were all together in the stadium, and then we went back to the horse area where they filmed it and stuff like that, and then they did the other archery, or the other martial arts stuff.
Okay, can you imagine being in the opening ceremonies of a martial arts event like that? You've got some really buff dudes and women that are in that opening ceremonies.
I'm scared.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I could not do it. And that's one place you don't want to cause trouble, because that's one place you just don't want to cause trouble. But I'll tell you what, this is
People are wonderful there.
This is really cool. And do you have a website where people can go if they're in your area, or I assume you do clinics and things that they can find?
I do. It's SSW4Southwest-MountedArchery.com.
And I have that in our show notes as well. We'll put that in our show notes. And I think Jennifer might have already linked to it on our Facebook page. This is so much fun, Diana.
And also,
yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say also, Mounted Archery of the Americas is the major horse archery body in the United States that's been, you know, going on since 2007. I'm actually the president right now, but that's a great website to go to and look at if anybody in the country is interested in horseback archery.
Do they have the instructors listed there? Because, again, you want to find one that's at least fairly local to you. Are the instructors listed in there?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right, cool.
And the different chapters around the country, so they can join a chapter and you know, rank and do postal matches and have a lot of fun. Postal matches are fun because those, you go and do an event that they stick out. the International Club puts out there and says, you do that, you rank it, you, you know, time it, and then you post it, and it goes internationally. You get to see internationally where you stand. So it's a lot of fun.
We live in Ocala, Florida. Jamie's out in Phoenix, but we live in Ocala, and mounted archery is pretty big here. Matter of fact, the Ocala magazine, they just built a new range, and they did a whole highlight on mounted archery. So I've been seeing it in more and more places now in the mainstream media, too.
Right, and Lucas Novotny, who's our number one guy, he's number one in the U.S. He's one of the top three in the world. He's the one that started it, the father of it, and taught me. He lives there in Florida near Ocala, and he's also makes all our the high-tech bows. The Saluki Bow Company is his, and we all die to have a Saluki bow because most bows, you know, run you about 200, and his are a little over 1,000. They're just the Cadillac or the, you know, Excalibur of bows.
Wow.
So he's there right where you are.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, and good luck. Keep it up.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
Jamie, I so want you to do this, but I also don't, because I like my co-host and I don't want to do the show by myself. So there's that. But what's the worst you could do? You're not going to shoot yourself in the heart. The worst you're going to do is like take your finger off or a foot, right?
Like, I think Thor would be really, really good at this, except for like, I don't know. I mean, I want to do it. I've wanted to do it for a long time.
Can he run straight fast?
Yes.
Oh, well,
he can run straight and fast. That's about all he can do. So
that's about all he needs to do for this particular.
It's about all he needs to do.
And put up with arrows around his ears. You probably have less of a chance of shooting your horse's ear off with a bow than a gun.
I wonder if she's got clinics. I'll have to go look at her website.
I think you'd have a blast doing this, Jamie. I really do. I think this is right up your alley.
All right. Speaking of just awesomeness and entertainment, have you seen the dressage test that Cecilia Berger did over the weekend?
No.
So Cecilia is one of our auditors, and she posted her dressage test. Don't look at it because I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
So she took her horse out. I believe it was his first ever dressage test. She did not have a, well, I'll just read you the test. Okay. So basically when you enter at A, enter X halt salute, and then proceed working trot. So what happens is they give you a score and then they give you a comment, and I'm just going to read the comments. So A, enter working trot, X halt salute. The judge's remarks was lovely halt until he kicked.
Oops.
All right. So you proceed working trot. Basically we got to do some circles. We got to do some canters and some transitions. So the next comment is a few entertaining steps. The next comment is error and shaking head above bit. Coming against hand, a bit tense. The next comment, very creative choreography. That there's not supposed to be
no, there's not usually massage. Choreography and dancing involved.
The next comment shows ability for lateral work. Yeah, it's not supposed to have lateral work at all. The next comment is unrequired leg yield. Unrequired.
The next, practicing.
Like, this judge is awesome. The next comment was very entertaining. The next comment, I really admire your commitment. This test is going from bad to worse. And you can see that the raindrops have fallen on the test because at this point, mostly steady, well balanced, could be softer, obedient. Like, the rain kind of knocks some sense into him. But the collective marks are when the judge actually really kind of makes a comment. Some tension when heavy rain. Like in heavy rain. Shows activity needs suppleness. Next comment, does not like torrential downpours.
And who does?
The rider's marks, very determined and solid seat. Basically, you stuck it out, girl. Good job. Naughtiness affected accuracy of the test.
Yeah.
And then the final judge's remark, clearly a talented pair, unfortunate circumstances. So apparently a torrential downpour occurred as she was doing her test. So fantastic.
You know what? Congratulations. I think she's going to be proud to get this.
I don't want to be that girl.
Lovely haul until he kicked. She wrote, yep, he was giving me the finger as the rain picked up and the wind started swirling. That's the greatest dressage test ever.
Do you think the judges just wait for one of those and they have all of these things in their mind that they want to say, all these clever anecdotes that they're ready for?
No, because I've ridden that horse and that judge has been like, this was really rude of you to bring this horse in front of me. Like most judges are like, how dare you waste my time with an animal that clearly is not trained? How dare you enter my arena with a horse like that? This judge was like, bring it on, sister. This is awesome. Like the first time a judge has ever actually appreciated the excitement. My judge is like, your horse is a bully and you're a terrible rider and you should be excused.
We have Leslie Wiley here. You've never been that one in the arena, have you, Leslie?
Oh, no. Dressage is my favorite phase.
Hey, we have to take a break for Ovation. We're coming right back with Leslie Wiley and her special guest here in just 1 minute. Or not. Let's come back to that.
You can do it.
No, I can't. Come on. We're going to come back to that. We'll go to this instead.
Horse Nation.
This episode is Do Try This at Home.
Leslie, I'm...
Failure is always an option.
Any result's a result, that's for sure.
Or not.
Well, Leslie is with us right now. Hi, Leslie.
Man, that bumper music just never fails to be the highlight of my Monday morning.
Well, and I have your guest on here. Go ahead and introduce her.
I'm so excited to talk to today's guest in person, Maggie Pattinson. She is the official coach and trainer for the Mongol Derby, and kind of a big deal in endurance stuff and things. She's the chef to keep of the England Home International Endurance Squad, and I am so excited to talk to her because I feel like she's been sending the Mongol Derby riders these wonderful little emails with tips and tricks and training, you know, pro tips. And I feel like she's been like holding my hand the last few months. So welcome, Maggie.
Hi, Leslie. Lovely to speak to you at last.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Glenn.
Maggie, is this your job to keep her from getting killed? Is that your main responsibility to make sure she doesn't die?
Do you know, my main responsibility is to make sure the horse's welfare is good. But I do try to look after the riders as well. So if Leslie's doing all her training and everything, she'll be fine.
Love you it. Just keep telling me that. Never gets old.
Now, do you know what? I think one of the most important things that I say to people is give yourself, you know, something once a month or whatever, something that makes your palms sweaty and, you know, makes you just, you know, the butterflies start, and get through that, because there will be days and horses that will really make you feel like that. And if you can just, you know, kick on, go with it, you'll have a ball. Mm-hmm. Getting scared is not the thing to do.
Nope.
No fear, Leslie Wiley.
Yeah, don't worry. I have a lifetime of riding
sweaty palms.
Naughty sweaty palms, naughty horses.
Yeah, naughty. Well, that's good.
So, yeah,
that's what you need. And that's these Mongolian horses are just awesome. I think in the years that I've been going to Mongolia, I every time I come back and just, I mean, I've had a lifetime of horses and I've been lucky to have some really inspirational horses myself. But, you know, I come back from there and I look at these things and where they live and you just think, oh my God, horses are such amazing creatures.
Yeah. I cannot wait to meet the Mongolian horses. They sound incredible.
They absolutely are.
What really differs, what's different from like the horses you would find in England or America and the Mongolian horses? What is the most different thing that you can think of?
I guess the fact that, you know, they're closer to nature, you know, the horses that we tend to deal with, even if we deal with native ponies or, you know, stud animals that, you know, are maybe not as handled as much. These guys really are living as nature intended. You know, they wander around in herds, you know, even though they come in and they're ridden and, you know, they're picked out of the herd. Each time they come in, you know, they're a little bit wild. And once they've, you know, got tied on the line, they're fine. But they live as they're intended to live. And, you know, so you see things like, you know, you look at their feet, for instance, and you can tell the injuries that maybe they've had in the past. And you can see the sort of land that they're running over. And you just, you know, that look in their eye is about, yeah, we need people, because if we didn't have people, we wouldn't still be here. But you know what? We're still wild and we're still as we should be. That to me is the main difference. You see all shapes and sizes, pretty ones, ugly ones, cute ones. But, you know, they've all got four legs.
You know, it sounds like the horses, they're so connected to their landscape and it's so in their blood, just knowing how to take care of themselves, that you can sort of harness that sort of feral nature. You know, with our horses and I do eventing, there's sort of a tendency to, in really highly trained horses in the Western world, to sort of micromanage them. And you want to be in control of like every footfall and the shape of them and every, you know, every muscle in their body feel connected to that. And it sounds like with the Mongolian horses, this the smart thing to do is give them their head and trust
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, my background was eventing and I worked in racing and dressage and everything. And when I got into endurance, very quickly, the thing that I sort of remembered was my childhood days, you know, on ponies over the common and, you know, getting on something bareback and just going and never really worrying about the ground and, you know, cantering along the roadside, jumping ditches and, you know, those sorts of things. And coming back from, you know, getting into endurance, I thought, actually, you know, I need to be letting a horse find its own ground and work its way out. Going out to Mongolia has just enhanced that belief. So I still kind of micromanage the training of my horses and people that I'm coaching. But ultimately, I always say to people, once they're over the start line, you need to drop your reins and you need to let them find their way. And I think, you know, I think in one of the training blogs that I sent out, I said I think it was the last one actually, when we were talking about fitness and preparation, and saying, you know, that the most important thing for any athlete really is base fitness. And these guys have got the ultimate base fitness because, as I say, they do what nature intended. They are wandering, they're moving the whole time, moving and grazing, moving and grazing, moving and grazing. So they're, you know, they're doing all that walk work and all that trot work that, you know, we're so anal about, and we, you know, we know that's the right thing to do. These guys are doing it themselves. So that's, I think, you know, you'll come back, Leslie, with a whole new respect and a whole, probably a whole new vision of what, you know, what you're doing and why you're doing things. And maybe, you know, you'll take a little bit of a step back about some of the traditional things that we do. I've done myself, you know, with interval training, and why do we do interval training and how do we do it? And really, you know, does one lot of interval training work for every horse? Of course it doesn't. So I think, you know, it just gives you a whole new picture and a whole new respect.
Right. And you also, in addition to horse fitness, your business is on the hoof distance training, which you have a website and folks can check that out. You also do a lot of coaching, have a lot of words of wisdom for rider fitness. how much, obviously, you know, you want to come into the Derby with your absolute A game. What are some tips that you have, that maybe not even just for, just for Derby riders, but riders in general, to make sure we're doing our horse a favor by being as fit as we can be?
I think, you know, core fitness is key to horse riding. And I think, you know, every sort of rider that's ever ridden something that's been a bit difficult, you know, that bronks, knows that the only thing that keeps you sitting on there is your core. And I think that core fitness is the most important thing. Everything else sort of comes from your core, as you know. So being able to be strong in there and go with it is probably the most important part of riding. Now, I also, there are techniques that I sort of have people doing, things like changing riding diagonals on really regular basis for different things. So about making the horse go better, but also for your own fitness and your own balance and stability. So two of my favorites are probably changing every 5 strides for straightness and just feeling, you know, is everything really moving under me? Am I moving really correctly? How often does my horse actually throw me off of that diagonal? Why does it do it? Mm-hmm. And then changing every 10 strides will just help to sort of lengthen the stride. And then also into that, you know, adding a leg yield that takes you 10 strides to go across maybe, you know, a 2 or 3 yard track, and then straight, and then leg yielding the other way. All of those things are really good for your own core strength and your own balance, and also then help to sort of lengthen the stride of the horse and just ease those, all of those muscles that we've all, you know, we all get, the riders get very tight in the adductors and that sort of thing, you know, and those are the things that really help to release and help you, I think, help you get that bond and that understanding of everything that you want moving. You know, you want those hind legs under you. Do you really feel that? And I think if you can do that, hone into those techniques in your training, then it doesn't matter what horse you sit on, you'll get to then feel the difference and feel every single horse and how every single horse is going.
Yeah.
And I think that's a key part of fitness.
The other thing, Leslie, is you could go to the Wild Mustang pen of the Unbroke Mustangs and just ask to ride a few. That might be good practice, too.
Good core strengthening.
Yeah, that'd be core strengthening.
Or something.
Too, yeah.
Core strength. Nerve strengthening. Something.
Yeah, core strength and sweaty palms.
Yeah, certainly the sweaty palms.
Ideal training. You don't want to get hurt before you go out there.
Yeah, no. That too. And go ahead.
No, go. You go.
And are you already in Mongolia or are you in England now?
No, I'm sitting in leafy Surrey, just outside London. So no, I don't go out until you guys go out there. I don't go out for horse selection and that sort of thing. I simply don't have the time. I'd love to, but it's not, I leave that to others to do. So no, I'm in Surrey doing it all from here.
So let me ask the other way. What are the things that you've seen from riders? What are the biggest mistakes riders have made coming in their attitude or preparations?
Non-preparation. I think one of the biggest ones is kit. Is people coming out with, oh yeah, you know, I've bought these endurance stirrups and no, I've never tried them before. Okay. Do they really work for you? And that's a big thing, you know, they're a huge important thing. Stirrups and rider kit as well, you know. Well, you know, I bought these Lycra lovely riding trousers, but I've never worn them, and they might not suit you. So that's a big one, I think, is kit and thinking about, you know, thinking about and using the right stuff. and not just because everybody, you know, everybody you spoke to said, oh, you know, this pair of riding boots was the best thing I've ever had, or these stirrups were fantastic. They might have been fantastic for them, but they might not suit you. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's a very big thing. And stirrups are probably the biggest mistake that people make. Mm. I think the other thing is two more things, really. One is the sort of just not respecting just how fit you need to be. Mm-hmm. And the fact that fitness has got to be an all-round fitness, you know, but not treating your body like a temple, because you're going to get dirty. You're not going to have a shower. You're going to be eating stuff that you don't normally eat. So if you really treat your body like a temple, like you would normally for sort mm-hmm. of training for something, you're going to get sick, because mm-hmm. your body's just not going to be used to eating the sort of stuff that you're eating. You know, if you're a vegetarian, oh my God, you just so need to prepare and understand and say, how am I going to deal with this? Because you're mm-hmm. in a country where vegetables are not that prolific. And there's an awful lot of goat.
God.
So she should go to the grocery store, to the meat counter, and find all the meats that are just out of date by a day or two. Is that good preparation?
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, possibly. But, you know, taking a bit of fur off the top of a new yogurt.
Oh, my God.
No, I think things like, you know, in the Western world, we've moved very much away from eating fats and fatty food and stuff like that. Whereas actually there, you know, if you're eating something that's freshly cooked, you know, the first cooking of the goat, for instance, you know, you as a Westerner, as a visitor, you will be offered the greasy, fatty lumps, which, you know, they turn your stomach a bit. But think about it. Those are the bits that have got the highest amount of energy. They keep you warm. And so, you know, to them, that's an honor that they're giving you that rather than the nice, juicy little bit of meat that, you know, we're used to sort of having. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you don't eat fat at all, I'm not saying go out and eat loads of it, but at least, you know, have your stomach a little bit prepared for what's going to hit it. Because the consequences are fairly, you know,
right.
they're fairly dire and fairly fast if you don't eat fat and then suddenly eat a lot of it. So that's just one thing, you know. I mean, there are things that you can avoid, obviously, but just be
not
thinking that you can do 10 days of riding on energy gels, because then you'd just end up with knackered kidneys, you know. Mm-hmm. So just being sensible and thinking about, you know, what it is that you're really doing. It's not just a marathon race. It's not an Ironman. It's like nothing you've ever done before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are so many variables that are out of your control, ranging from what you put in your body to what the horse that's underneath you. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
You could practice the not showering for a week at a time. You could practice that.
Only if people haven't got to sit next to you.
Yeah, right. I work from home. It's fine. I take probably fewer showers than I should.
Do you know, it's funny. I think, you know, you just don't notice it when you're out on the step, you know, and you think, actually, you know, I'm sweating every day and no, I'm not washing. I'm not doing, I guess everyone smells the same, so we don't. But the Mongolians say that the Westerners, they say we smell awful. But generally, they think that Westerners smell awful. So, you know, it's all relative, isn't it?
It's all relative.
You know, we've been having guests on here, as you know, from the Mongol Derby with Leslie here for the last couple of months. I am not sure whether we are helping her or just terrifying the hell out of her. I'm not sure which one. We're...
You'll be fine, Leslie. I'll look after you.
Yeah. I think that we're just making her take this a little more seriously. Like, it's not something, it's not Lady Martha. This is like, you're on your own, girl. This is for real.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I vacillate between being extremely excited and being terrified. So back and forth.
And that's a good thing, because you then have a healthy respect for it. Mm-hmm. Because I think the third thing, going back to your unprepared thing, is people that come out with this absolute, I'm coming out to win. That's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Because, do you know what? There's an awful lot of luck involved in it. And I think you set yourself up then for, you know, doing well, crossing the line. Every single person that reaches every single station is doing a fantastic thing. Everybody that crosses the finish line, doesn't matter whether it's in first place or last place, they've won, because it's an amazing feat. And, you know, so whether you're, and we, I, one of the things we always say in our sort of briefing at the start is, you know, we don't remember the winners. I couldn't name every winner for you now, but I could name people in every single year that had some amazing experience, or, you know, were great fun, or were miserable, or, you know, it's not just about who crossed the line first. It's about, you know, the enjoying the experience and enjoying just the most beautiful country and fantastic, just lovely, lovely, lovely people, the Mongolians. And knowing that you will be meeting people that you've probably, you know, maybe would never have met in any other time, in extreme circumstances, who will probably remain friends for life. You know, there's a real community of ex-Derbyists. Quite frightening people, but a real community. They can all drink vodka. And they can
Leslie's
all
tell in. Leslie's
stories.
In.
Leslie.
Well, you know,
vodka's
too,
important, Leslie. Well, you'll need it.
Maggie, last year was a perfect example of just what you're talking about with the three from Texas there, for the three that went across the line together. I mean, they were kind of like, we're going to do this together. If we win, we win. If we don't, we don't. But we're in this together. And
Yeah. That was really great. You know, they'd all had different struggles. They'd ridden separately. They'd ridden together. The last few legs, they'd really helped each other. And the realization for them was, actually, we don't need to win this. We can cross this together. It's not just about us. It's about the amazing experience. Although Will is coming back to win this year, I gather.
I'm just going to follow him.
What did the organizers do? Had that ever been done before? Maggie, had that ever been done before? What did the organizers do when the three came across together? Did they go, now what?
Well, no. Do you know, every year we have to make something up. it's an ever evolving. The only thing I did, so I was there at the finish line for them, and they were actually walking, and they were leading the horses. And the only thing I did say was, no, I need you on the horses over the line. That was the only thing. But yeah. Well, technically, sort of, you know, it's a very hybrid between adventure and race, and one of the sort of FEI endurance rules is that you must cross the finish line on the horse, so you can lead it in and out of vet gates and what have you, but you must cross the finish line. You must start and start, go over the start line and come over the finish line on the horse. And so I felt, you need to be on those horses to come over the finish line. So, but other than that, you know, I think, sometimes it's been great having big winners, and we've had racing finishes, and we've had, we've had all sorts of finishes. We've had finishes that have been, you know, terrible, when Devon, bless her, you know, came over first and then lost because she didn't meet the metabolic criteria for the vetting, and so had a 2-hour penalty, and so was actually second place to somebody, you know, who'd come over the line an hour behind her. So so to have three guys finish together at the same time was lovely. It was a really, it was a great thing. And I think that's one of the very special things about the Derby, is that we embrace whatever happens, really.
Oh, that's very cool. That is very cool. Well, we're running out of time here. If you had one last piece of advice to give Leslie.
Oh, come out full of joy and openness, and you'll have a wonderful time.
I like that. I can do that.
Jennifer wrote here, and any result is a result. So
that's true. Line. Yeah, awesome.
Hey, Maggie, I'm going to be talking to you, too. We also do the World Equestrian Games radio show. And
all right.
So we're going to be getting a hold of you. We'll be obviously covering endurance. So I might be looking to you for some guests and things from the European side.
Okay, fantastic.
All right, cool. Thanks, Maggie.
Okay. Thanks. Right. Thanks, Maggie.
Thanks. Bye. Good luck.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
I could listen to her all day.
I know. She has the best voice. I was like, I'm going to just start calling her when I start feeling scared. And she can just talk to me in her sweet, comforting voice. Like, it doesn't even matter what she's saying. She can read the dictionary or something. But just talk to me.
Yeah, between Diana and Maggie, we're like, everybody's like flowery, awesome, like covered in baby powder and fairy dust. I mean, seriously.
Only they both could kill you on a whim, especially
exactly,
Diana. Hey, hold on 1 second. We got to do an ad, but Leslie, hang in there, okay? We'll be right back.
Horse people know that they can count on Ovation's value, quality, and style when it comes to hard-wearing schooling attire, affordable show gear for horse and rider, or top-of-the-line equipment for riders at every level. From breeches to bridle work, saddles to stock ties, helmets to half-chaps, Ovation is the premier brand of riding apparel and equipment for you and your horse in the United States, outfitting riders at every level from head to toe. Ask for Ovation brand riding helmets, breeches, and footwear at your local tack store, or go online to ovationriding.com and see the fantastic variety of quality, fashion-forward, affordable products from Ovation. ovationriding.com.
Ovation also has a contest right now going on where you can win a topaz jacket. It's Ovation Riding Topaz Jacket, and your choice of navy, aqua, passion pink, or safari. You can visit EnglishRidingSupply.com. You'll find all the information there. It goes on till May 22nd. You can just sign up to win. We also have posted it on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. Just scroll down. You'll find it there. I took some notes, Leslie, while she was talking, and this is what I have. So I have the fact that you have to eat more fat, and your husband happens to work at a smoking factory plant. Mm-hmm. So he could just, you know, all the parts they cut off because nobody wants them. He needs to bring those home, and you need to cook them up and start eating those. There's that. The second thing I had written down here is you need to not take baths for a week at a time and go out and roll in the dirt for a while each day. The third thing is you go to the grocery store, to the milk department, and you find the milk that's out of date. So you might have to go to like one of those Indian grocery stores or, you know, one of those that aren't so reputable to find the out-of-date milk. So you'll need that. All right. So those three things.
Let me comment on that, and let me help you train. I dated a guy who would like eat anything that was in the back of the refrigerator, and it was like be like mold, whatever. He would just scrape it off and eat it. And I said, "What?" I'm like, it's making me gag thinking about it, what he would eat. And he would say, "You know what? I'm going to survive the apocalypse. You're not."
You're probably right. And you know, that was the fourth thing I wrote down is thank God Jamie didn't get into this thing because she'd be dying over there.
I mean, yeah.
Because they are so nice. She'd be in a yurt and she'd be a special guest of these people and they're handing her the fat. She's gagging. They would be all offended. They'd kick her the hell out and she'd be eaten by wolves.
I think pretty you much. Just played out my Mongol Derby right there.
Yeah, pretty much.
That was what I pictured in my mind. Are you ready for this, Leslie? Are you thinking you're getting there?
Oh man, I do. I think I'm getting there.
It's gonna be so awesome. I'm so jealous. You're gonna have so much fun. It's gonna be incredible. You're a great rider. You can handle anything the horses throw you, as long as you just like she said, just like let them go. Like you said, just let them go and let them do their thing. Mm-hmm. You're gonna be amazing. All you have to do is just make sure you understand your little compass thing, and then you'll be fine.
That's what we're most worried about.
Just the little compass thing.
The technology
we had coming back to you.
Put bread in the shed and follow Ted. That's right. Isn't that how it works?
We had one of the top mounted archers in the country on earlier. You might want to listen to her, too. One of the things that she's been to Mongolia many times, and I asked her of all the countries she's been to in competition, which one she'd go back and live in, and she said Mongolia.
I heard her talking about that. Yeah. That was comforting.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And she said because of the steps and it's so beautiful and pretty and everything. Now, apparently they save the good horses for archery and you get the rest. So, well, yeah.
I was thinking, I was like, man, you know what? It would be cool to carry around Mongolia a bow and arrow. Not that I could do anything with it, but
it'd look really cool.
I wouldn't mess with me if I was, you know, like, oh, we're steering clear of that girl.
Have you decided what's going in your 11-pound pack?
Not much. That's the great thing, you know. If I get stressed out about what am I going to bring? What am I going to pack? I'm like, it's 11 pounds, you know. Like you can't mess this up.
What shoes are you going to wear? Do you have like some? Are you going to like get a Dewberry sponsorship?
I know, right?
I wear those things.
Are you better off with half chaps or shoes or boots or what?
I think like Maggie was saying, you kind of go with what you're used to. Like, you know, I've been talking to a few different people about what they've been wearing, and you know, it's like it really does vary. But I'd ride in boots and half chaps every paddock boots and half chaps every day. So I think that's kind of one of my story, and I'm sticking to it, you know.
I'm telling you, I rode all winter in my Ovation Country boots, and it was awesome because then you just pull them on and pull them off. There's no like getting your legs putting your leg up on the tree and then putting the half chap on, like slip them on, slip them off.
Are you kidding? Riding in Ovation after Country day three boots. Her leg isn't going up on any tree.
I know, that's what I'm saying, like on and off, and they keep you from getting wet. Uh-huh, you know, so yeah. They protect you like wet, dewy grass. Yeah.
Are they warm? Really think would they about be hot, though?
No, I mean, I ride in them all. I can ride in them until it's Phoenix summer, but I just rode in them. It's like 80 degrees. They're warmer, but they keep you warmer, you know, in the morning. So anyway, something to think about. That's my suggestion.
Yeah, I imagine you don't want your feet getting wet. That would suck.
Yeah.
These are awesome. They go all, you know, they're like big, tall boots. They're great.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, did they tell you what the temperature is going to be while you're there? Is it get cold? Is it hot as hell?
I think it can be anything. I think it can be all over the map and change from one thing to the next. And they've had record highs where it's been like over 100. They've, you know, I've seen pictures where everyone looks like they're, you know, a drowned rat or freezing cold. So you need a raincoat.
They tell you that, right? Does your raincoat and like if you brought one of those puffy winter coats along, which are really light now, does that count towards your weight?
Yep, it does. I mean, you can wear it, have it on your, I think you can, you know, wear whatever you want when you ride, but you have to be wearing it when you ride off or it counts as weight in your.
I'd be wearing every piece of clothes that you have and then just stop about 100 yards down, strip down.
What's the movie where they talk about, you know, you can wear your underwear for 4 days, front, back, then turn them around, back.
She isn't bringing any extras, so.
Nope.
Front, back, inside them out, turn them around, front, back. You've got 4 days right there.
That's right.
Those other 4 days, well.
Do it again.
Do it again. Watch some puppies and do it again.
I assume in this beautiful countryside, you're going to find a stream or something, you know, along the way that you could probably wash your face anyway.
Yeah. And then there's going to be like a Mongolian herd of like cattle drivers that are up top going, hey, look, there's a lady down there. She's naked in the lake.
Is that the Mongolian accent?
That was the Mongolian accent. Hey, look, there's a lady down
there.
Sounds
a lot like the Mexican accent, actually.
She's naked.
Or Italian?
Come and see the lady in the A, mate. She's naked.
And now we threw an Australian. Well, Leslie, thanks for bringing her on. She was terrific. She really was.
She's lovely. Her emails have been really, really helpful and fun. And yeah.
All right. So eat fat, rotten milk, and get out there and practice your core exercises, which you're going to be doing over the toilet after you eat fat and rotten milk anyway. So
gross.
I'm just trying to freak Jamie out here.
It's going to be amazing, and you're going to have an amazing experience, and we're all jealous that we're all just going to be armchair quarterbacks, and we're so happy for you.
I did look at Jamie. Awesome. I did look at flying over. I figured we could record a show from the start, right? But it's like $80,000 for the two of us to fly there and back.
It is not $80,000.
Does American fly there?
I did finally buy my ticket after you guys reminded me that was should be on my to-do list week's show. I think mine was almost $1,800.
Round trip.
So that's not
25
not
stops.
Yeah, right.
I looked last week and it was like $850. Yeah, I mean there was in two stops.
Does
not
American
that bad.
Go there?
Yeah. Yes, they do.
Oh, so can I be your brother and you just stop and pick me up?
No, they won't buy that.
Doesn't work.
You're
that
way too old for. You're way too old to be my brother.
Oh yeah, but you were the accident. It's fine.
Listen, wow. Dad, stop trying to pass yourself off as my brother.
Leslie's so happy she stops by every Monday. What a wasted time it is for her. HorseNation.com. Thank you, Leslie. Take
care. You guys have a great week.
All right, you too.
Bye. All right, Grandpa.
All right, after that, are you happy you're not going? The whole food thing, insulting the natives.
The food thing would be really tough. The food thing would be really tough, but I still would.
Because if you can't carry more than 11 pounds, you can't carry enough bars even for a week.
Can I survive on 11 pounds of Clif Bars for how many weeks?
I don't think you can carry enough for a week. I don't think you could.
Gosh, I don't know what I would do. I mean, if I ate meat, I would get so sick.
You'd get sick. You haven't had it since you were a kid, right?
I do not have digestive. I haven't had meat in 30 years.
I'm serious. You would have issues with that.
If something is cooked with meat or it's touching it, I get sick because I just don't have digestive enzymes to do that.
Really,
I would have to,
as she said, vegetables are not really a thing. So it's like, what would you do?
I don't know.
I assume there'd be other vegetarians that have gone. You could talk to them.
Yeah.
All 11 pounds would be Clif Bars. No extra underwear for you.
No, front back. Turn it around, inside it out, front back. Turn around, inside it out. sorry, I couldn't carry a raincoat because I had to have food.
Yeah, that's right. You'd have every possible variety of Clif Bars. You'd have every flavor they make. You would have
so skinny at the end of that, though. It'd be amazing.
And sore. And the thing is energy, right? Could you eat enough Clif Bars to have enough energy?
I don't know. I don't think so.
That's a good question. You know, it's funny that I've been listening to the Appalachian Trail Hikers podcast, and they talk about hiker hunger. They said the first month, you hardly eat anything because your body isn't acclimatized to that yet. But then they say from there on, you just eat 5 to 10,000 calories a day. Your hiker hunger kicks in, and you're still losing weight.
Wow.
And, you know, this one's not quite long enough, so you could probably make it 8 days, right, before you died. It's whether you had enough energy on day 8 to finish. Yeah, I would. When she was talking about that, I was thinking, God, Jamie, I'm so glad you didn't get in this year because I don't know. That'd be tough.
All right, I'm starving to death. I need to end the show. I'm hungry.
I'll send you over some bacon, okay?
Sounds good.
You can practice. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Tomorrow is the Certified Horse... What's tomorrow? Certified Horsemanship, Jennifer? Yeah, Certified Horsemanship Association is tomorrow. So you can look for that. And then Jamie back Wednesday. And then we have the NATRC Thursday and the last really bad ads of the month. So if you want to be in for this month's prizes, you better get them in. We're on vacation next week. So no really bad ads. Get them in. And I do want to thank the auditors that have been posting on our auditor page, Jamie, about several of them thought that last Friday's show, was the best show we've ever done. And I think we've done some good shows. So thank you for that. And, you know, if you haven't listened to it, I'd say go back and listen because apparently it was a hit.
We don't know why. We just do what we do.
And some days we think it's funny and you guys hate it. So
I think that she, that one of the comments was, I like the unscripted stuff. And I'm like, we have a script.
Yeah, that was one of the comments. And we were both like this morning in the meeting going, what do we script? Was there something we meant? Are we supposed to script something?
Should we have a script?
God, that'd take effort. We're not doing that. No, that's too much work. No script. See you, everybody.
All right, Spay, Neuter, Geld.